Wow, that was very, very awesome. Let's take care of a few station things, and we'll talk to the string quartet. Incredible. And, well, why don't you talk about yourselves a little bit? What's your name and each person's name? Announce yourselves.
Ready, set, go.
Ladies first.
I'm Melanie Jane. I play cello. I'm a second-year grad student at UWM. Study with Stephen Cartman there.
I'm Nick Brayton. I'm a junior at UWM in my undergraduate career studying with Louis Rossoff.
I'm Travis Liana. I'm a first-year graduate student at UWM in the string pedagogy program, and I study with Professor Bernard Zink.
And I am Aaron Jacobs, another violinist. I study also with Bernard Zink at UWM. I'm a grad student, and
Aaron is our new concertmaster in the UWM Symphony, so we're really, really thrilled to have him with us this year.
He does a good job.
Yeah, we like him.
Do you think he's listening?
What's that?
Think he's listening?
Maybe.
Probably. Yeah, Dr. Zink is actually our coach for this ensemble, so
well, he's doing a good job.
Yeah,
indeed.
We like him. Yeah. We'll keep him.
So why don't you tell me a little bit about the dissonant, one of you tell me a little bit about Mozart's dissonant quartet, where that came in his career and his life and what that means to him. I mean, it's one of his more well-known,
right.
probably his most famous quartet, at least, that
yeah.
I hear really, that historically people talk about.
Yeah, this is actually the dissonance quartet, not the dissonant.
Well, you know.
But, you know, close
I'm
enough.
I'm not good at those things.
It's the last of what's called the Haydn quartets. And they were published in 1785, and they were dedicated to his friend and mentor, Joseph Haydn. And what gives them the nickname, the dissonance quartet, is that 22-bar introduction, the adagio introduction, where the cello is holding down just that single C, almost like a heartbeat, and then the other instruments enter, and it kind of just this color wash. And the direction is really ambiguous until you get to the last couple of bars where it's holding down that dominant seventh chord. So when the Allegro starts in that C major, it just seems to sparkle and shine at that point. So that's a little bit of where.
So you're saying that the tonal center is kind of vague until that point.
Right. And this was kind of a new thing that the classical composers were experimenting with at the time, how to deal with dissonance within harmonic structure and counterpoint within harmonic structure. And this is really as high as you know, Haydn and Mozart are starting to take little steps further towards the romantic spirit, I think. So instead of kind of toying around with it in more minute places, he faces the problem head on and gives us this 22-bar introduction. And in fact, theorists in the 1820s would argue, did Mozart really mean this? Because it just doesn't sound right. And but the edition that we're playing from is the official transcript, so...
And there's also more evidence if you look through the quartet as well. There's more chromatic elements that seem to be coming through in every single movement as well. So that kind of ties together that nice introduction that we have. That
I do know that at the time that Mozart and Haydn and the friends of theirs would get together and they would improvise together. It's odd that improvisation was a huge part of teaching in the 1700s and early 1800s, but by the late 1800s, it became very academic, and that was thrown out the window, and really the only improvisation left was in organ music, which has a lot of room for improvisation. But I wonder if any of those ideas that were coming out, that they were fleshing out, came out in improvisations. It's kind of neat to think about what was going on in some parlor in 17 such and such. So what draws you to this piece?
Well, Aaron picked it out.
Yeah. let's do this one. Okay.
Well, I've always enjoyed this quartet, and besides that, it's just it's a standard. It's something that at least every string musician should become acquainted with if they haven't already, because it is so famous and so, you know, important for Mozart and. And important for quartet literature, you know, it's just one of those
staples.
Staples.
I was thinking it was a good one to allow us to become used to each other playing wise, because this is the first time we had all played together as a group in a quartet.
Yeah,
you guys sound great.
And I think it was a nice word to really be accustomed to each other with.
Mm-hmm. Now, our string quartets, I mean, people who listen to the show know that's primarily, mostly what I play. That's my favorite thing. Is that for you guys, your favorite thing? Have you guys always really been into string quartets, or is this like a newer thing to be very interested in?
Well, chamber music in general is a really exciting experience, I found. I mean, no matter what combination you have, it's always a different experience every time. String quartets, I mean, they're kind of versatile. Like, you can use it and learn a lot from it, and also put yourself in the community a lot, as, you know, we're here today as well. So it's one of the standard combinations, and we have a lot of literature to pick from, and it's a good way to start.
On a personal level, I have to say that I was really lucky that I was put into this group, I feel, because they're all, you know, amazing musicians, and really, we work really well together, I think, and communicate really well as musicians. So I feel really fortunate that Bernard put us together this year in this group. So
a lot of composers felt daunted by the string quartet because a lot of people think that's the purest expression of quote-unquote composed music. Because there's no fat. You can make a symphony and put as much fat on it tonally as you want. Mm-hmm. Whereas a string quartet, it's pretty darn naked.
It's kind of like the rock and roll trio. You know, there's nothing better than a rock trio. You know, so really shows how the quality of the musicianship and the composing, I suppose, when fewer players. So.
I know that you know, the Mozart, and then you go to the Beethoven string quartet that he stole basically from Ravel. Wouldn't talk to him ever again. And then you go on to Bartok, and those are pretty much the litmus tests of, you know, Haydn, the Mozart, to the Debussy, to the Bartok, or the sort of the torchbearers of string quartets in the history. What are some string quartets that you guys really like?
Well, I think everything you mentioned.
I can go on and bore you to tears.
All of the above.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard not to find. It's hard to find things that I don't like in quartet. I'm sure there are some, but you know, I'm still. There's so much written for quartet, for string quartet that I still feel like I have a lot to learn there, you know. I always will, and I'm still not acquainted with everything. But I am. You didn't mention Shostakovich, and
I was told that you guys were going to play one, and I said, "Was it number 8?" And she said, "Oh yeah, that was the one."
I almost feel like I want to finish my degree now and go back and do another one with, you know, emphasis on, you know, a chamber thing. Like, the UWM has ICM. And that'd be a great program to kind of go back and do.
Yeah, the Institute of Chamber Music. It's a very good program.
Good, at UWM? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. It allows students to focus on just playing chamber music. They also take lessons, and a lot of them play in orchestra or different large ensembles, but they don't have to take academic classes, and so it's really...
It's more of a conservatory style.
They just performed George Crumb's Song of the Whale, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
And that was really fantastic.
For electric flute and electric piano and cello?
Yeah, George Crumb was a pretty neat.
That was really great, and they had visual effects and everything, so it was really...
We actually should play Black Angels. That's his famous string quartet.
Next semester, eh?
It's a real, as by his title, I could tell it's a real uplifting piece.
Yeah.
I'll have to ask for electric violin for Christmas or something.
So who are some of you guys' favorite composers?
Dvorak. Beethoven.
Yeah, I like Bartok a lot. Mozart is actually one of my favorites.
How can he not be after you take Professor Noonan's class? You have to love Mozart after that. There's so much good stuff out there. How can you really decide? And, you know, of course, you have the Bach cello suites, you know, so you have to pay homage
to
Rostropovich,
him. The Rostropovich Bach, would be very, very beautiful.
You know, it's just endless. It's overwhelming trying to study and keep up with all of the repertoire because there is so much. Every time you think you've made some headway, you know, forget it. There's just so much more out there, which keeps it exciting, though, too.
Yeah, absolutely.
I tend to take, you know, different periods and
Like right now, I am obsessed with Mozart, but last year I was obsessed with Brahms, and before that, Bartok. I mean, it just kind of shift emphasis, try to acquaint myself with everything that composer's done, and then move on. You know, I'll still always love that stuff, but I just want to learn as much as possible, and that's the best way I could think of to kind of do that.
Well, the more I, you know, I've been doing this for a while, and I've really been into collecting string quartets, which is my main thing that I collect at home and own. And in the end, everything always just comes back to the late Beethoven string quartets. And
it's rock and roll.
That's pretty much what everything has to go up against. I remember reading something where somebody said that they didn't want to attempt a string quartet because they could never surpass the late Beethoven string quartet, so there was no point. It's almost like it's almost like saxophone players trying to like play tenor saxophone, and you're never gonna be better than John Coltrane. So what's the point of even trying?
Right.
Well, yeah. Then you have to start thinking of different ways to go about doing it. So that's
right. I should sell my violin.
No.
So do you guys play your instruments in contexts outside of classical music?
Yeah. You know, you always have to be challenging yourself and just exploring different areas. I mean, this is just Mozart right now, but it's almost kind of like reading books. Like, you read a certain author, listen to a certain composer, whatever, and then you move on to someone who's related and just things that keep you excited. So there's always different things to be doing.
I actually began as a bluegrass fiddler.
Cool.
Give us a sample.
No, I don't know.
Do a hoedown, come on.
You know, there's been lots of things during my undergraduate degree. I was able to play in a jazz combo a few times, and that's really interesting, you know, especially most of the music, well, with the exception of bluegrass, most of the music that I've learned has been from music. And so when it comes to improvising, that's a very different skill for a classical musician. And it's really helpful too, you know. It helps you really become acquainted with your instrument and know it in a different way, which, you know, has transferred to my classical, you know, learning too. It's been very nice.
I've done a little bit. There's this band called The Danger, rock and roll band, great guys, and they asked me to play in the last album, and I wrote some parts for two or three of the songs.
And for violin?
For violin, yeah. And it ended up being quite a great experience, and it was probably my first time doing that. It was a lot of fun, and it, like Aaron said, it just makes you think in a different way, opens you up to different things, and seeing how you can use your abilities and talents in a way you're not used to. So that was a good experience for me.
I've done a lot of studio recording, and I've actually been in this studio performing a bunch of times as a singer-songwriter. And into my solo act, I incorporate electrified cello and, you know, rhythm tracks and stuff like that. So, yeah, I've always been searching
how to fit it
into the rock realm, and I've sat in with a bunch of people live and stuff like that, so...
Like who in town?
Victor DiLorenzo, sat in with him. I'm thinking, who else? Heidi Spencer.
Are you on her, aren't you on her CD?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, on both of them.
I'm on the new one.
Yeah. Oh.
Not on the same track you're on, I don't think.
No, I don't know. I never saw anybody that recorded on it, you know, because we all came in at different times to do it. But, like, I do tracks across the country. Michelle Anthony just sent me last year actually sent me some bed tracks, and I can record them on Pro Tools in my house, and then I send them back to her, and it's great. And the next thing I know, she sends me the final CD, and actually just recorded something for Mike Magistro and Goran from the Guffs. That Mike Magistro wrote the song and Goran sang on it, and they had me do some cello tracks for that too. So I've always been working outside of classical music with my instrument.
That's really, really, really cool. Hey, Mr. Viola?
Yeah. Well, if anyone needs a viola, give me a call. But I just began my career as a violist a couple of years ago, and I think...
Were you a violin player?
Growing up a bit, yes. And then I took a lot of time off of music and came back and decided to get a degree in it.
And viola.
Mm-hmm.
Why'd you pick the viola?
It fits me well. I was drawn to it when I was younger. It's just one of those instruments I always kind of wanted to be a little different. But
because I mean, I really like the viola.
Yeah, it's a unique,
it's a darker,
sound.
Richer, bigger sound.
Yeah, it's definitely a unique sound. The literature, I think, is really interesting, especially now that I get a chance to explore it and develop my own sound as well as an instrumentalist. So I'm right in the middle of it right now. So, and I have extreme privilege of being with these talented musicians.
We love Nick too.
Now, you guys are playing a show soon, right?
Mm-hmm. Coming up on.
Do you want to talk about that?
Friday. Well, it's a private party for, I believe, for the Bradley Foundation.
Oh, cool.
So, a bunch of groups from UWM will be playing for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's about all we know about it at this point, right?
Well, yeah, they're still working out the time and that kind of thing, I think. At least I haven't been told about it, so.
Yeah, but the UWM music program is really happy that they called to seek out some musicians, so, yeah.
Well, anytime you guys ever want to come back on the show and play, I would love it. Maybe if you guys tackle that Shostakovich next semester. Or
oh, no problem.
See. Bernard looked at us kind of funny when we said we wanted to do that.
Or if you guys want to come in and play a solo piece. I mean, we love having live musicians here on WMSC and the more classical. If you know anybody that would like to come and play.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be, you know, 20th century modern like I usually play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Mozart was absolutely... absolutely gorgeous, and I want to thank you guys so much for coming on, because it was really special.
Thanks,
I really appreciate it.
We appreciate it.
And well, thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, let me put some music on while they back up.